Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And we've got a couple of things I want to kind of go back on, or some go-backs, whatever you want to call it. And as I always have to tell you, it's now or never, folks. I don't know. I mean, do you consider yourself gaining ground? Do we consider all of the things that have happened to our liberty, all of the things that the progressives have implemented, how much closer, putting aside abortion, how much closer are we to getting sex education out of the education system? As a matter of fact, a lot of people aren't willing to actually go back to the 50s, you know, that fight. Many people are saying, oh, well, this is going too far with this sexual dysphoria. But what about the fact that they're even teaching that type of morality and normalizing immorality in school? I mean, it all started with that. Are we closer to getting back to, you know, the basic fundamentals of reading, writing, and arithmetic, or in sciences, and actually focused on academics? Or are we fooling ourselves in allowing, you know, the things that we've tolerated for 50, 60 years or even longer, and just focused on the new little fight of the ground we just lost on critical race theory and these types of things? Oh, well, we seem to be winning the onslaught, or not really, though. We have some wins, but we don't have an actual, you know, stoppage of the type of curriculum that the federal government is putting in. And the problem is, you keep on fighting the issue in front of you instead of the underlying issue that's causing the problem. When it comes to our education, the fact that we are allowing the federal government to meddle in something they have no delegated power in, well, they're going to continue throwing crap at you. You know what? They're in the boardrooms now thinking of stuff that would be so reprehensible, and you're none the wiser, because they're going to continue doing this because they know they're going to get away with it, because nobody, well, except for us, nobody else is actually calling this out for what it is. This is just a symptom. What we see in the classroom and what we see in our education system is a symptom of government's overreach. It's that simple. That's what Madison and Jefferson would have recognized a long, long time ago, because that's what they did in 1798, which is one of the reasons why we're going to be going through that. The Whiskey Rebellion is next, and then the 11th Amendment. Basically, we kind of covered that, so we'll probably just gloss over this and why we want to gloss over this, the 11th Amendment. But then we're going to dive into the 1798 resolutions of James Madison. And we're going to go into the details and the history of how these men constantly had to explain and defend what they were doing. And so we'll probably cover, if we get time, because there's only so much time between now and Thanksgiving. Because, folks, it's, what, less than 2 weeks away now? Yeah, so anyway, we'll do what we can to kind of cover the Enabling Acts and the Missouri Compromise, Monroe Doctrine, Manifest Destiny. If we don't get to that, we'll try to get to it after we start going through. Because going through setting up constitutional counties and and basically setting the stage in fighting the real problem, in fighting the real fight, well, it's, you know, you have to understand what you need to do. You have to understand how we have to start thinking just a little bit differently. I mean, we all know what's wrong. I mean, when we look at, you know, children being exposed to, you know, content and subject matter that is well beyond their, let's just say, their maturity and capacity to really process and understand the information, in an educated form because they're just uninformed. We actually, you know, it's, well, as I was going to say, there's no sign that they're going to surrender their control. Are you kidding me? Once evil has control of something, it will never, never let it up. It may give you the appease you and make you think that it's giving it up or it's no longer doing the real evil things. Do you understand the irony? Do you understand the hypocrisy that we are accepting? Anyway, let me get back to what we want to do. As you know, the show is also sponsored by republicreview.org, and you are listening to the only show that goes through the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. One thing I wanted to get back to, because I've got a few go-backs, like I said, and the one thing I just wanted to kind of cover, because I believe it was Friday that I kind of spoke about this two-party system. And when I mean system, I mean systems. There's one party system that is working with you, the voter. That is the party that you're aware of, that, you know, has the labeling on the ballots and all the people that want to get empowered to stand at that mantle of power so that they can reach into the trough of treasures that is basically there for the grabbing of all those elitists that make it into our government because they're no longer constrained by the Constitution, by their morals, ethics, and so forth. And so the one-party system that we're talking about, again, is the electorate. The other party system is the system of those empowered. Do not think for a minute that the money that they're making and the money that they play with at the government level is not positioning themselves to protect themselves and maintain power. They're doing that's what corruption does. I mean, if you understand how far corruption will go to protect itself, to maintain its control, well, in other words, they're operating in a different party system, in a different uniparty system that we can't even fathom. I mean, in our party system, at the electorate level, we, the voters, you know, the Democrats, Republicans, Constitution Party, all these different parties, that party system is constantly, you know, fighting over the minutiae because we really believe we're on different sides. We really believe that. But the real facade is up at the national level. Like I told you, the national level is, and even at the state level, they have positioned themselves to ensure that they protect their power and control. We're going to get into, and I'm going to have probably bring forward some conversations with some third-party members like Constitution Party. Hopefully we get some Independent American Party and so forth, so you can kind of see and understand how the two parties, the Democratic and the Republican Party, has literally a monopoly on political control. And for people to really overcome that political party control, it's down at a local level, and it may happen at a state, but don't count on it. Don't count on it, because the Republicans and the Democrats working together have done give them a grade on whether they've done a really good job in maintaining their control and getting their agenda forward. I would say probably a B, not an A, because I believe that they wanted to collapse America a long, long time ago. They've made moves and they tried to do certain things. I mean, we just saw that happen in the 2020 election. And so there has been, even though Biden has told us that they have the power to basically crush us, they haven't started yet. And the only reason they haven't started yet is because there are certain parameters that they are looking at that they're not ready to pull that trigger. So in other words, they have to get us a little bit further and a little bit further to we're finally in that position where they can seize control and mitigate all the risks and be able to be successful. So when we look at the party system in politics, this is a much darker party system, and it is nothing but compromise. The reason I wanted to go back on this is I want you to understand why we have a hard time penetrating and changing these swamps, the swamp in Congress and the swamp in your state legislature. That's because we have failed to create a collective conscience that we demand a honorable, moral, and a principled person with the integrity of fulfilling their oaths and their promises, in fulfilling their legal obligations in supporting the Constitution. When they get into office, they don't care. They now believe they've passed the threshold where they have the power to compromise everything. And until we create this constitutional campaign, which is what we're going to get into after we get through the resolutions, what we want to do is help you understand, you know, how to do and how to initiate your constitutional campaign to literally start taking back your county and rooting out everybody in your county that fails to support the Constitution. We can no longer tolerate, you know, this mealy-mouth, you know, politics in allowing compromise anymore. We have to demand full compliance. We'll be right back after these two promos. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. So when we ended last week, we kind of closed out on Madison's essay of property, and we didn't get a chance to really give you some context of the paradigms of property then compared to today. And so I want you to think about this. Madison basically talks about the most precious property that we need to protect is the fundamental property of your ideas, your expressions, and those types of things. There is no doubt in my mind. See, there were people that wrote letters. There were people that actually shouted out that they would kill Thomas Jefferson up, you know, from the New England states or what have you, that he deserved to die, and talk about how they would torture him and that type of stuff. I mean, the rhetoric was just through the roof. But you know what? Not one person was arrested. Not one person was sued. Not one person was held for libel. Not one person was, prosecuted or even a person of interest. Because we have an inalienable right to say and express what we want. Now, it's one thing to absolutely fabricate and lie and basically cause harm to somebody. When I say harm, tangible harm. But what I want you to do is I want you to really look at this Alex Jones case and this lawsuit that actually... So this has to go to the Supreme Court. This will probably ride in appeals all the way up to the Supreme Court. Because does Alex Jones have a right, even if he knows it's a lie, does he have a right to say what... I mean, it's one thing as a public servant, as an elected public official, to stand in your official capacity and tell us that we're going to be destroyed by global climate change and that, you know, our coastal ports and everything else are all going to be underwater by a certain year, and that doesn't happen, and you have no evidence, and this is not, there's no facts based on anything. They're just trying to impose fear upon you to get you to do something, to allow them to do what they want to do in controlling you. A big manipulation. That right there, that form of demagoguery, even though for a private citizen has the right to say and do whatever they want, even if they're an entertainer. I don't like the fact that entertainers do this, and I believe that entertainers can be, you know, either censored or, I mean, every corporation has this right to be able to say, you know what, if you're on our air, what have you, we're, you know, on YouTube, I'm okay with YouTube actually shutting down the entertainers. I'm not okay with YouTube shutting down, or Facebook shutting down the people. See, when somebody makes it a business, then you have to basically place your business out there in a market where either the supply and demand is satisfying the market and the channels of distribution, because the channels of distribution don't have to peddle your business. Now, we can force them to protect and honor your rights of speech, your rights of reporting. This is why we need to look at the press as the people telling their story, because that's what the press is. The press is somebody that saw something and is out there talking about it. But with Alex Jones, he's strictly an entertainer. But to be clear, to hold him for damages and, you know, all these other things that they're whacking him with, how are they not trying to set precedents that he has no property rights to his own thoughts, to his own words? This is a matter of property, folks. This isn't a matter of feelings. This isn't a matter of people, you know, constantly being barraged or, you know, harangued or what have you. It's one thing to say he may have been stalking or he may have been, you know, constantly. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. He didn't do harm. You know, how old is that saying? Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me. That is a paradigm that says you have a right to say whatever it is you want. And if I allow it to hurt me, that's on me. I want you to think about that. Think about how Madison talked about a society and how a just society would protect those types of things. A just society doesn't protect the manipulation and demagoguery of political operatives who are out trying to push an agenda. No, your responsibility is to support the Constitution, not an agenda. The other fact, or the other thing I wanted to get you to think about, is look at what HOAs do. Now, I know that nobody wants their neighbor to paint their house bright pink, you know, to make themselves an eyesore in the neighborhood. I do also know that nobody wants to have somebody turn their property into, you know, a mining construction type of, you know, operation. That I actually read this, and I think it was either in the late 80s or early 90s, where in California, somebody in a homeowners association actually started drilling and, you know, pulling minerals out of their backyard, like a real mine excavation project. And the people complained and they shut them down because the noise and everything else, and it was a violation. And that actually stuck because they have these things called zonings for residential and business. And when you're trying to mine or use your property for a business intent or business purpose that has been zoned for. Now, if you don't like how government has taken these kinds of controls, then the reason why people have surrendered this level of control is because of that one idiot that wanted to create a mining operation in his backyard. Does he have a property right to doing that? That is probably one of the better debates I think that could go on, because I really believe that at the end of the day, do we have a right to tell somebody they can't do something? Well, if you want to get into mining, if you want to do that, and you want to, you know, buy property for that, then you have to be able to make sure that. Because the state government does have those types of controls. Folks, don't think that I've actually had these discussions with people that really believe that the state government is constrained by the U.S. Constitution, that, you know, they can't do anything other than those few things that the federal government can do. And I'm going, are you kidding me? Are you aware of the 10th Amendment that states that those things not delegated to the federal government or not restricted of the states are reserved to the states and the people respectively? And so how is it that, you know, we get into this mind model of, well, we have all of these rights? No, we share our rights with our government as we see fit. Now, there's a lot of problems that have come down the pike because we've actually allowed tyranny of the majority to change and subjugate the people of the states. I don't believe that any constitution at the state level that is amended by this majority rule, 50% plus one, is a constitutional Republican form of amending your constitution that allows the population centers to gain full control of the state and to dictate to all of the rest of the state. And so this is where we really need to, I'm telling you folks, a part of this constitutional process, and this is why we're going to get into it, what we really need to do at the county level. You know, here is your checklist, and I don't have that, because to do that, it really takes some time and work and analysis, but I have the arguments of what, why, and how to do all of this, and most of the stuff that we need to do, and some extra criteria to do this. And we can hopefully come along with or come up with the checklist of, well, you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to do this. And if you do those things, and you may need to improvise, but for the most part, it will be a pretty, we'll try to, it'd be great if we had a good solid list that would basically give you the direction of how to unite the citizens of your county to recognize and stand up for their inalienable rights against government, and in making sure that government does their two primary focuses. Because the only reason we establish government, the two objects of government, the reasons why all governments are created, is for two things: to protect life and to protect property, personal property. That's why thou shalt not steal. Well, okay, we've created a law. You can't steal, you can't take, you can't fraud, or, you know, those types of things. And so look at HOAs, look at businesses and look at private individuals of how some people want to assert their rights, where we, unfortunately, maybe the people of your state has allowed your city, your county, your state to pass ordinances that are contradictory to your property rights. One great example of that is the ability to have chicken coops, the ability to have some form of not commercial chickens, but to be able to feed yourself and to be able to have fresh eggs and fresh chickens without having to go to the grocery store. The grocery store loves it when you have to buy everything from them. We've come to a point where actually everybody is out to make sure that they get every penny that they deserve out of your pocket. And that goes to Wicker v. Filburn. We'll be right back after these two promos.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
So Wicker v. Filburn kind of sets a stage. If you understand what that case was, it was back in, I think, 1943, where the government came along and said, I think it was Filburn, you decided to grow wheat so that you could pay or feed your livestock and bypass having to pay taxes on buying wheat. And so the government sued to basically say, because they basically tried to tax him for the wheat on his property that he was growing to feed his livestock. And what ended up happening was they got a ruling from the court that basically said that because he took himself out of the market space, they could charge him taxes on what he would have had to pay based on what he grew. In other words, didn't matter if he sold it or not, they went after him and ruled that he had to pay taxes. This is how businesses and everybody basically gets themselves into a position that we have a right to take money from you, and that money is ours. Your energy companies, your utilities, look at everybody that has their fingers in your pocket, and they try to claim that you have this, you know, you have this privilege of being able to be served, but they have the right to hold you to these various, and they're getting more and more restrictive and more controlling to hold you into very specific energy markets. The state of Washington is basically banning natural gas. They will not allow houses after a certain year to have natural gas heaters and natural gas, you know, anything, ovens, what have you. I'm so glad that when we moved into our home, it was primarily electric. And we were paying a lot more money for heating, and, or not, our heating was gas, but we were paying a lot more money on our electrical bill, and our energy bill consolidated was much higher because of our electrical consumption. So we ended up replacing our electric stove with a gas stove and a gas dryer, and our energy bill went down dramatically, dramatically. And so why is it that they want to be able to control and move you into electricity? Because then they can control everything you do and consume. You do know that they have the ability by looking at your smart meter and determining what appliances, what you were running in your home at the time. Did you know that? Petraeus already told us that they have that technology now of identifying all the different signatures that are coming across the electrical wire on how this energy is consumed. You know, they've been gathering intelligence in so many different ways of being able to monitor stuff that they are actually spying on you in these capacities, folks. So when we look at, and I know a lot of people go, okay, so this is just crazy that government does these things. And I actually really had no plan on going down this, but it's important that I go through some of these rat holes. When we look at forming a government, if you take your family and you have a few kids and you take your brother and his kids and your sister and his and her kids, and you know, so you take this pretty tight family and you go off into your own country and you create your own government, then you're probably going to have a good likelihood of having some harmony for a generation or two. That, you know, you'll probably be able to get along because of the common bond. As you realize that your procreation and having kids and so forth is going to be somewhat incestuous, you may have some problems in the old gene pool. But that being what it is, let's just say we're back with the genetics of Adam and Eve, to where the DNA and the genetics was just so strong that it didn't matter. And so I would just say that when you look at how you govern, most people would very quickly come to an agreement in that type of an environment, because either the trust or what have you. I mean, you're just, the closer you are in a family type of setting of people, you know, it's all family, then it's the easier it is to get along. Now, everybody should be able to have reference points to how contention in a family alone can occur. But even though you can have contentions in a family, you have a greater probability of contentions when you start mixing families from completely different cultures or what have you. So let's say in another model, you do the same thing. You actually take your family and you go to a country and other people kind of show up. And so as everybody kind of agrees, this is a beautiful, great place to live, and you start trying to create government, there will be more contention early on in how you are to govern, how you guys are going to get along, than in comparison to all being a family that migrated into that country. Does that make sense? I think it does. So what happens is you, in these early forms of government, it's all the people. You have all of these people sitting at the table, and you have these elders or what have you. You have these hierarchies, castes, whatever, because society, you know, has a propensity of trying to create these filters or these classes. And so men, women, what have you. And we go down these different paths to say, oh, this is better than that. And so we lend, oh, well, this is a patriarchal, this is a matriarchal. So however things play out and how everybody kind of agrees to move in these compromises, there you go, compromises. Government and politics is about compromise. And so if you're smart and if you have a great amount of history, then what you would do is you would sit down and you would hammer out in forming your government a list or enumerating roles, responsibilities, powers, and properties. In other words, if you're really smart, you would use the model that the divine hand of providence inspired our framers to use. Why? Because you delegate these powers to government and you hold them to that. Well, we never gave you the authority to tell us what we could do with our own property. We never gave you the authority to tell us how we're supposed to, you know, worship our God or who our God is or, you know, any of these types of things. And so if you understand the fundamental difference between freedom and liberty, liberty is in a government. You have both the freedom to choose for what you want to do, but you also have the responsibility to concede to the powers delegated and accountability for those actions that violate those laws that have been created for the purpose and the betterment of society. So in other words, if you decide to make prostitution, adultery, and those types of things illegal, and you, somebody in the group, maybe not you, but somebody in the group crosses that line, then they have to be held accountable. Regardless of who it is, the law demands that somebody, that justice be served. And so getting to that point in a natural process doesn't naturally occur. Because what people always do, and the propensity of mankind, is to compromise. Now, so here's the beautiful thing about how our Constitution was formed. We actually sent a bunch of men as delegates representing the people of the disparate states. And they went in, and they all agreed upon what government would need, and they agreed on the roles and the responsibilities and the powers and the property that government would require to function to do what it needed to do. And boy, they did an awesome job. Now, when it came to the states, they didn't have the same due diligence. Why? I mean, you had a perfect model. Why? Well, at that time, people didn't think that they needed to confine their state government, maybe. Maybe they wanted the state government. You got to remember, at this point in time in American history, every state had a direct relationship with its own church. Compassionate services, welfare, education, medicine, or health care, those types of things, that was all provided by the church, the state church. Where the state was actually giving it, you know, a little bit of taxes to basically do some stuff. Because the majority of the operations of the church actually came from contributions of the parishioners. So in other words, we were basically paying, you know, into our own insurance to taking care of ourselves, so to speak, at a moral level so that we could take care of others, not just ourselves. But if that bitter cup fell upon you, they would have the same compassion towards you because you were a contributor. When we're all contributing and helping others, you know, that, and we all have that responsibility and accountability because we have agreed, principally, morally, and all of these other things, that we've agreed to participate and to participate and give. And so that's a different, if you look at the government, of what the government had power, the religious responsibilities and so forth, they were entwined. We'll be right back after these two promos.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so and I think it's helpful to start looking at how governments form and how over time, since Adam and Eve, how we have experimented in so many different ways. In almost every way, we usually surrender all powers to government in every way, except in this experiment we call this hybrid, or I call this hybrid constitutional republic that has been formed in our U.S. Constitution for the United States. And so what we have done, what our framers had done, again, by the divine providence, they created a hard legal limitation on government. Nobody challenged what these men were going to go do because these men were honorable and understood what they were supposed to do. At least that's what everybody thought. And everybody just felt that, okay, if you really think about it, America kind of had this premise that There were kind of some general powers out there. We're going to show you, and that's why we started off with the Assumption Act, that how they formed this government, Hamilton quickly started perverting the Constitution and assuming some general powers or implied powers underneath some things that kind of implied, well, maybe we can create a bank. Maybe we can assume all of these loans and so forth and so on. These things, as they started going down this path, and there's no doubt in my mind, as noble and maybe as good-intentioned Hamilton may have thought he was being in trying to do the best financially for America, he made some big mistakes, and he was wrong in violating the Constitution. Bottom line, if it's not there, if it has not been delegated, they can't do it. That's how it was defined. And he didn't care. And so when we start looking back, going back to the fundamental ideas of property and how we want to fully respect the individual property. I talk to people all the time that, you know, hey, my property. Well, in the middle of Wyoming, Montana, and what many people call the flyover states, or I call it the heartland of America, you know, the heart of America, well, their property rights are still, you know, pretty well preserved because the mass, you know, population control movement hasn't started taking over. But I'm telling you that they have been permeated by the Agenda 21 or the 2030, whatever you want to call it, the 3030 plan. I don't know. It changes so many different times, but it's the globalist plan. And almost every state in the union is starting to pass laws to take away people having the access to water under their feet. In other words, you can't drill wells. You can't try to access water if it's not being provided by government. You know, at the very founding of this nation, life was hard. Your energy was something that you had to go and create. I mean, or you had to go and take into your own measure. In other words, in some places, like in Ireland, the thing that they used for energy was peat moss, right? They dug up the moss, let it dry, and then they would burn that. They would have candles for light. So they went through a lot of effort throughout the given year in providing energy for themselves. Now, same thing in America. We had to cut down trees. We had to dig up coal. Whatever the sources were, as we started finding better sources for burning energy like kerosene from oil. So we started going down these individual paths of being able to provide until people started bringing products to the market like kerosene to say, or oil to say, wow, you know, we can have oil lamps instead of candle. Now, if you had oil on your property, you could, you know, extract that oil yourself. If not, then you could actually start, you know, making your own wax and candles if you wanted, but you had to buy the raw goods or make them yourself. You were self-sufficient. You had to be self-sufficient. Or at nighttime, it was dark in your cabin other than the fire that you had to for the light. When that fire went out, everybody went to sleep. And then as soon as daybreak, you got up and you... That was your little bit of time you had to be productive. Now, if you look at it and you think about it, at nighttime, you had no productivity unless you had some form of energy, some form of light to assist you to exert your human energy in being productive, whether that be cooking or whatever it is you could do in making something to, you know, either bring in revenue to be. It is all about being productive. This is why families had such large families. Because the family was the business. The family was, you know, working hard to survive, to sustain itself, to be able to buy sugar. Sugar wasn't even a normal commodity. Many houses in America did not have sugar. And that's why, you know, when sugar started actually being sold in America and refined and so forth, they actually had little lock cabinets. So when we start looking at how hard it was to getting stuff, and we all of a sudden see all of these things going into a free market that we could provide these things and everything else, and then going, wow, this is, you know, America got great. It was becoming so productive because everything was at a free market. We started creating interdependencies and so forth, and things were going good. But in the background, every little step government was making to regulate this and regulate that, they were actually manipulating our market and seizing control. Today, folks, we don't live in a free market society. Don't tell me that we actually have a free market. The stock market isn't even a free market. It's completely controlled and managed. We're protected, so we're not supposed to sustain losses. Well, actually, it's only protected for those, the rich and the opulent. You and I, if you're invested in the stock market and it crashes, who's going to recover for your loans or what have you? Nobody. And look at what happened in 2006 when Obama stepped in and violated contract law. As we look at our current system, government is so far out of the controls and out of the confines of the Constitution that there's not anything that they're not playing with and meddling with. to where we are now at a point where they control every facet. And they are in league with corporations making sure, or utilities or what have you, making sure they can extract their pound of flesh out of you. And if you don't want to play with in their game, they can basically shut you down. Folks, these are not good times. This is why I tell you always, as I look to the east, I see no sign that things are going to be, you know, let go. Government, it is antithetical to think that government will ever let go. So when we start thinking about all of these things, your right to buy things, your right in the properties and the market, you have rights in being able to buy things in the open market. And government has gotten into basically telling them that you can't have these things. We've deemed these unsafe or unnecessary. And during the pandemic, they told you what was necessary. Everybody has seen and understands this. America knows this. But America is failing to connect the dots. And this is why all we have to do is demand full compliance on the Constitution. All we have to do is unite in demanding that the rule of law be adhered to, that every public servant fulfills their oath of office. They're legally bound to supporting the Constitution, not the oil oligarchs, not the energy oligarchs. None of these oligarchs that they have created is constitutional for them to support. And so what we want to do is we want to get into a lot of other things. I was going to get into the Whiskey Rebellion. I don't have time. I have less than 2 minutes. But one thing I do want to say, because I think this is important, I think I can share this with you really quick. It's basically the concept of the application of money, because Madison talked about this in the cod fishery bounties, that the application of money, based on that, if government used this power because they had money, they could do anything. You know, this is how things really get out of hand. But when you understand that government wanted to make sure that they could spend money on whatever they wanted, and they had the ability to take the money. So here's the irony, that the party basically controlling all of this, it's the apparatus to making the money happen, the taxes as well as the spending on their agenda. If we're going to fight, just to understand this, because as we look at the communist movement, billions of dollars from globalists are paying to overturn this country. If we're going to fight, I'm telling you, we don't need their level of money. All we need is, one, the truth, but we need some form of money. The difference between the grassroots of good and the grassroots of evil is we have truth on the side. But the grassroots of good needs money. They need contributions. If you can't afford to help contribute to your own constitutional county, then we ask that you contribute your time. The irony of what we're doing is to reduce taxation to those constitutional powers, and only those constitutional powers. We want to actually constrain government and actually start freeing it up and making it impossible for America to be for sale ever again. We have the power to do this. We just need you to start contributing. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic. And as I always say, we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.